This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Lee Chui Lin. On April 19th, 50 Muslim residents in Taman Medan staged a protest outside the community of Praise Petaling Jaya Church. They claimed that the cross on the front of the building was a challenge to Islam and could influence young Muslims. Now, what does the law say when it comes to places of worship? Giving us some answers today is Rajiv Rishikaran, State Assemblyman for Bukit Gasing, back for his monthly show. Rajiv, do you know whether the cross has since been placed back on the building?
Hi, I'm glad to be back this month, and we have a very, very hot topic. I'm not sure whether the cross has been placed back. The last I checked, it hasn't been put up yet. But I think whether it goes up or not, it's totally the prerogative of the church to decide. What is important is that the Selangor government has come out loud and clear, telling them that they have every right to put it up, and no one should threaten them otherwise.
Of course, you know, when this first made news, there were a whole ton of people who got involved.
Oh, yes.
What is the latest update on the status of the police's investigation into the matter?
Actually, there was a news piece on this I read on the Malay Mail online today, actually, that our Home Minister Zahid says there is no sedition probe into this matter. I think it's rather surprising that the police has come to that conclusion, because in comparison, recent events have shown that they've come down very hard on people protesting. Look at the GST rallies and whatnot. So it's surprising to see that this, in this case, where it is far closer to their definition of sedition, touching on race and religion, that the police finds no wrongdoing. But I think that's for the people to judge.
So perhaps you could explain also the position of the Selangor State Government, because as you mentioned, it was something that kind of came through loudly. So just to clarify then, what exactly is the position that the government, the state government's taken on this?
I believe the state government has issued quite a clear statement on this. We have to see this issue. There's a few components to it. Number one, the right to worship and the bullying tactics that is employed by the protesters. I think that's something that we strongly condemn. From our MB himself, Azmin Ali has spoken out very quickly and decisively on this matter to say that this group should not be intimidating minority religions. That's not the way of life in a multi-racial, multi-religious country. So in that aspect, we have been very clear that this is not a behavior that we condone. Contrary to that, since it has come known that the members of the protesters were UMNO members, we have yet to see UMNO taking any disciplinary action against the protesters. Now, if you look at the position of the church operating in the shop in that location, our exco Elizabeth Wong has also come up to state that churches are allowed to operate from shop lots. So issue of legality does not arise in this matter.
But MBPJ in turn classified the church as unlicensed because it didn't submit a written application to operate as a place of worship. So is that a conflict of interest? You know, is that something that, you know, represents a slightly different interpretation?
I think we need to clarify a few things here. This may take a bit of time, but first of all, the church is not a business. So it is, when we mention the word license, it directly refers to business activity, commercial activity. So if you're operating a restaurant, a grocery shop, a factory, then you do need a license from the local council. Now, if you are using a piece of land or a piece of property for any purpose of any kind, actually, the biggest basis is that you need planning permission. So the law states that, you know, residential property, like houses from flats, apartments, terrace houses, semi-Ds, are to be used for residential purposes, and you're not supposed to run commercial activity, with the exception of a few activities such as kindergartens, daycare centres, old folks' homes. So there is a clear specification of what we can use certain property for. So the state government in this case has come out to say that the shop lots are primarily for commercial activity, but there is no blockages, no restriction that prohibits churches or places of worship to operate from shop lots. And I think we also need to understand why such a decision is in place. Because in mature areas such as Petaling Jaya in the Klang Valley, It is very well built up. We have very, very little available empty land. And the previous town planning that was done did not incorporate sufficient land for places of worship. So I actually think it's quite a good thing that, you know, we live in a society that has very strong religious beliefs, regardless of what religion each of us may have. But there is a strong demand for properties to be used as places of worship, be it mosque, temple, churches, and so on. Because there is not enough land to allocate, to build standalone buildings for all these temples, churches, there needs to be other methods to accommodate people's religious beliefs. So you know, I think this is a fair move to allow them to use shop lots. I think the disruption is minimal on in terms of effect on the surroundings, and it's something that the EXCO has come out to clearly state that that's permitted.
So, in other words, then, even looking aside, you know, then other than Committee on Non-Islam Affairs, then shop lots as places of worship, fine.
Yes, based on the statement that was made by the EXCO, yes, shop lots for places of worship.
And do guidelines on this differ from state to state?
Yes, I would think so, because since these are made by state governments, I would think that different states may have different policies on the matter. Now, I have not had the chance to look at what other states, like maybe Perak or Pahang, may have on this matter, but it's very possible that different states could have different guidelines.
When we look at the licenses that MBPJ were referring to then, are we referring to commercial licenses?
When we look at permission to use a building, so all buildings or all types of land have restricted usage. You know, you can't just do anything on any piece of land. So that's why we have zoning laws. So when we have like zoning laws for, I think we look specifically at this, you know, commercial property, shop lots. The law specifies that you can't do certain activities at shop lots. For example, you can't run heavy industries at shop lots because that's going to disrupt the neighborhood. So if you have massive knocking, banging, emitting foul smoke into the air in your heavy manufacturing, it's going to affect the clinic that is operating next door. It's going to affect the restaurant that's operating next door. So we differentiate industrial activity from commercial activity, and we say that these heavy industries can't operate out of shop lots. We can also then go and specify that, you know, colleges can operate out of certain places. They can't operate out of certain places because it's not conducive and so on. So we also restrict colleges, private colleges, from operating in shop lots. It's actually a case-by-case basis. In the case of Slango, the EXCO has come to clarify that we do allow churches to operate out of shop lots because the need is great. So based on that, churches are allowed to operate. So that is why there is a need to apply for planning permission if you want to use the building for something that is beyond what is originally specified. So if you want to run a college out of a shop lot, you need to apply for planning permission. If you want to run a kindergarten out of a house, or some commercial activity out of a house, you need to apply for planning permission. So we actually differentiate approvals into, let's say, two broad categories. You know, one is planning permission, all right, where especially if you want to use a property other than its original intended purpose. And the second is a business license. So a business license only applies to businesses. It does not apply to any place of worship. Mosque, temple, church should not fall in this category. But we talk about place of worship and a need for planning permission, then maybe certain parties may have different interpretations. While we may say that churches can operate out of shop lots, do they still need to apply for planning permission? Maybe certain people in MPPJ thought that there should be an application or not. So I think these matters can be internally clarified. But what's important for the community at large is to know that the state government does allow churches or places of worship to operate out of shop lots.
Do you feel that prior to this story hitting the headlines, mm-hmm. this was something that many people were aware of? Because shop lot churches are not uncommon. You know, they are something that you see in a lot of neighborhoods. And they've been operating, I suppose, fairly uninterrupted for quite some time now. So is this something that we've kind of just assumed is okay? Or
I think a lot of us assume it's okay. And to be fair, the recent incident was not brought upon by the government. It was not any enforcement officer that went in to take action against a place of worship. So it was not initiated by the government, but instead it was initiated by protesters. So The government has been fairly consistent in terms of allowing places of worship to exist and to operate. No places of worship have been harassed or have been issued notices to vacate and so on. So we've got to remember that, yes, there was a controversy. It did bring these questions up for discussion, but this was not created by government or by enforcement.
I'm speaking today with Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. We're discussing the incident in Taman Medan and the community of Praise Petaling Jaya Church, but we're also looking at laws governing places of worship. If you have any questions, you can always reach us by tweeting at BFM Radio, as well as texting 016-201-9000. Up next, what is our right to worship? You are listening to The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon, this is The Bigger Picture and I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today is Rajiv Rishikaran, State Assemblyman for Bukit Gasing, here for his monthly show on local government. Today the focus is on laws governing places of worship. So we've mentioned this idea of the right to worship, or the, you know, this concept of it, but help us, you know, ground it. What does our right to worship actually mean?
Well, I think this question, it's much bigger than shop lots in churches. It's our personal right to have any belief that we do, and our right to practice any religion that we believe in. And I think this is, as it is granted in the Constitution, I believe this right is sacred and should be preserved, and it is precious to all of us, including myself. And all Malaysians must have this right. And that right is for you to choose your beliefs and not to have any beliefs forced upon you. So no Malaysian should be living in a position where, you know, faith is forced upon you, beliefs is forced upon you, or religion is forced on you, that you must follow this religion, you know. So that's, you know, in a nutshell, that is the right to freedom of religion.
But just to draw that distinction, there's freedom of religion and then there's worship, I suppose, which are two different things. Because I could choose to believe, my faith can be in a certain religion, but how I express that religion in the form of worship, I guess that falls under, to me anyway, a separate category. So does right to worship then mean that it allows me the right to display my faith in a way that I see fit?
I think that's a very slippery slope.
Yes.
I think that brings us down to a lot of interesting questions that we as a society should deal with, especially because we are a very multi-religious society. So there needs to be, I would say, more understanding and tolerance among all of us, rather than laws to control and restrict. Because if we were to rely solely on laws to control and restrict us, like, you know, you are allowed to pray at certain hours or not in certain hours, you can only do processions to what extent, you know, we all recognize that these things do happen as expressions of worship, but as to how we go about regulating them, I am not too sure if we want to go down the road where government regulates everything. I think a lot of give and take, a lot of discussion and dialogue should be preferred over having government regulate that. So certainly today it is not the role of the local council to come in and regulate worship, to determine like how you can and cannot worship. Because I think that will open a Pandora's box.
That
we're not ready for, yes.
Going back to the church that started it, that started this whole situation and started our conversation, really, and the cross that was put up. Is a separate permit required to put up a religious symbol?
To the best of my knowledge, all law is silent on this. And what MB, our elementary bursar, has come out and said that, you know, they're free to put the cross back and there's no restriction on that. So I think that's a good move, that we don't restrict things like this. But as far as we stand today, there's no law to regulate a need to apply for a particular permission to put up a religious symbol.
You referenced town planning earlier in relation to there being enough places of worship. What are the guidelines to build places of worship in our country?
All right. So when we look at places of worship, we want to look at them probably in two categories. The first is land that has been specifically allocated for a place of worship. And second, places of worship that we utilize existing buildings such as shop lots or factory lots or houses. So let's deal with them separately. Now, for standalone land, The government does allocate a certain amount of land for places of worship. Now, the problem is throughout the last three decades, you know, I think from the 80s onwards, a lot of new townships that were developed, a lot of expansion of townships, did not incorporate sufficient land for places of worship. Now, let's look at some examples like Putra Heights, USJ, Bukit Jelutong, where humongous townships, thousands and thousands of houses, yet places of worships, land for places of worships were not sufficiently allocated.
Is there a reason for that?
I think this is some weakness of town planning in the past. Now, we do have a rough guideline that says that any developer or landowner who wants to develop an area bigger than 100 acres must provide plots of lands for places of worship. Now, that was not properly implemented, so we have lots of development without this guideline being followed. Today, we might want to implement this, but the problem we face in urban areas such as Petaling Jaya, there is no more development more than 100 acres. In fact, all the developments that are happening today are pocket developments. You know, you've got small developments, 3 acres, 4 acres. It's very hard to find even 10-acre developments in PJ today. So then this rule does not apply to the existing landowners. But in planning the townships, 30, 40 years ago, the town planners should have taken more consideration to preparing such lands.
How does one apply to get a mosque built specifically? And is the process similar for churches and temples?
I don't think one applies to get a mosque built. I think that's a different road that gets taken to get a mosque built. You see, in that town planning layout, for any particular town, lands will be allocated for different purposes, such as for playing fields, playgrounds, for schools, for mosque, for surahs, for non-Muslim places of worship, and so on. So if you look at mosque, happens to be that in the town planning processes of the past, lands that are located for mosque, they will be surrendered to JAIS, Jabatan Agama Islam, who would then apply to the local council for the planning permission and the building plans to go ahead and construct the mosque. So that is normally undertaken by the government. When it comes to non-Muslim places of worship, so let's say you have three or four pieces of land that are available, different bodies could apply to the state government for it. It is for the state government to use its discretion to allocate this land to these applicants. The problem we have today is that you've got 100 times more applicants than available land to give them. So then we need to deal with the demand through other methods by allowing them to use industrial land. So we've seen in recent times in PJ, you look at Section 13, a number of factory lots, factories that have long moved out of Malaysia or moved out of Petaling Jaya, they now turn into commercial developments. And a few of them have actually been bought over by churches and are now being run as churches. Then you've got shop lots, which is far more common than that. So these are utilizing non-religious land, private land, for religious purposes. So with regards to mosque, it's normally already located in housing areas. So every housing area will have a certain number of mosques based on a ratio deemed fit when they were planning the township.
When we look at the discretion that's applied by the state government in terms of allocating, I guess, who gets what when you have those different petitions, what do you take into consideration when these applications come in to build temples or churches?
I think that's a very difficult question to ask. It's a very difficult question for the state government to answer also. One is to look at the area to see what is the balance of land that has been allocated. If, let's say, the area has a few pieces of land allocated for churches, but none for a Hindu temple, then I think it's only fair to give it to a Hindu temple. If it's like full of Chinese temples but not a single church, then probably it'd be fair off to give it to a church. But actually, this is quite academic, because if you look at areas like Petaling Jaya, there ain't no more land for these things.
What do you need to do in order to get a building or a house registered as a place of worship then, assuming that we're not one of the people lucky enough to be able to buy over an abandoned factory, and we're forced to go into these different sets of places?
right now, we have not come to the stage to allow these places of worship to operate out of houses. I think that's a whole different category, because places of worship attract huge crowds. They tend to attract huge crowds, and they may not be very conducive for these to exist within housing areas, because housing areas are normally peaceful, quiet, and neighbors may want some respect of privacy and whatnot. So where we have what we have done is we have allowed them to operate out of like commercial and industrial areas. Now, I think we've covered this earlier. The Selangor government, the EXCO, has come up with a statement that no permit is necessary. So for now, we can see that an application is not necessary to operate out of a shop lot. But if they were to build a standalone building, let's say you buy a private piece of land and you want to convert it and build a standalone church or temple on this land, the standard process will apply as it would for any other development. You first got to apply for planning permission. Once you get the planning permission, then you've got to apply for your building plans to be approved so that you meet the requirements. We have setback requirements. That means your building must be a certain distance from the road, typically 40 feet from the road. And you need to have a certain number of car parks to cope with your size of your temple or church. And these are the approvals that you would need to get before you can start construction.
So to break it down then into exactly what I guess is allowed and what requires notification and what doesn't, no to houses, yes to commercial areas and to shop lots without a written application, without registration as such, and if you were to operate out of an industrial area or if you were to build a standalone building, then that would be like any other development, yes. You'd have to just notify people.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Are churches, temples, or mosques allowed to own land?
Yes, definitely.
And is it true that while a mosque can be built in any neighbourhood, which we've established, other religious places of worship cannot be built within 100 metres of a Muslim neighbourhood?
No, that's not true. And I don't think we want to start classifying neighbourhoods as a Muslim neighbourhood or non-Muslim neighbourhood. And I certainly do not want Malaysia to go down that path of recognising areas as a Muslim neighbourhood or non-Muslim neighbourhood. I don't think we should do that. You know, this whole country should be a Malaysian country.
But does racial composition of a neighbourhood factor in when you're determining the allocation of places of worship?
Yes, it would. It logically should. Let's say you had two pieces of land that was purposed for a non-Muslim place of worship, you might want to look around and see what is the religious composition around you before deciding if we should allocate this for a Hindu temple, a Chinese temple, or a church.
And while I'm in complete agreement with you that I don't think we have, you know, areas such as Muslim neighbourhoods per se, but we do have areas that you can say are predominantly something or other.
That's certainly something.
We can see. And in a separate incident, Kuala Selangor MP Irmo Hizam Ibrahim was quoted as saying that some 300 to 500 Muslim residents had actually protested against a planned construction of a Hindu temple at Puncak Alam in Kuala Selangor, with the reason being given that 95% of the population in the area is Muslim. So do we need to look at our policy of building places of worship based on demographics? You know, would this protest have been with ground, you know, a fair protest?
I would choose to engage the protesters to hear them out. I think that's the very least we could do if they were to, if this is a genuine protest, if it's not a political play just to create certain diversions or attentions. But what we need to realise, even within what you just said, 95%. So you have 5% non-Muslims in that area. And don't they deserve the right to have a place of worship? And I think even though they may be in the minority, it is very important in this country that we should respect that. And the same respect goes the other way around. You may go to a neighbourhood that may be 70-80% Chinese. And I think the Muslims there deserve the opportunity to have a mosque or a surau in that area. If we go strictly on needing a certain percentage, a threshold before you can build a place of worship, I think that will put a lot of us into a lot of trouble. For example, the Sikhs, they're pretty much the minority in any neighbourhood you can pick. If we were to apply it, like you need a minimum of 30% in an area before you could build a place of worship, I don't think we'll have any good waras in Malaysia. If you look at Christians, in Peninsular Malaysia, Christians are still a very small minority. And if you were to go to especially secondary towns, and if you were to say that, you know, you got to have a threshold of 20%, 30% Christians in an area before we allow you to build a church, I think many small towns in Malaysia will see the churches go bye-bye. So I personally am not comfortable having such policies that say, you know, because 95% of the people here are of a particular religion, we should exclude all other places of worship. I think we can give due consideration to the concerns of the protests. Sometimes the protests are not religious-based, but more practical-based. Like, the particular location may be not suitable because it has no parking facilities and may cause tremendous traffic jams. So factors like this, we take into consideration to try to make adjustments. But on the principle level, we should not say no just because the followers of that religion amount to less than 5% in that area.
Is the issue here partly to do with construction as opposed to appropriation? You know, would it be different if people were just trying to occupy a shop lot, for example, instead of building an entire space?
If I understand some of these protests, I don't think it's a difference between a brand new construction or occupying a shop lot. It's just a comfort level, more of a personal opinion of this. I think what this particular MP should do is to, instead of encouraging the protesters along, he should try to broker an understanding to tell them that, you know, we've got to give and take. We've got to accept that we will not lose our faith just because another faith has their place of worship, their temple or their church. I don't think that should affect one's faith.
What about our policy of getting a place of worship demolished or relocated?
I think this is a bit tricky once again.
It's a tricky topic.
Yes, it is. a lot of issues with regards to demolition of places of worship that we see in the newspapers or here in the media, they often refer to places of worship which are on public spaces. All right. So sometimes the place of the temple may be on a road reserve and the road needs to be constructed, and so this temple needs to be relocated. Oftentimes, if the place of worship has been there for a substantial amount of time, there are temples that have been around for 30, 40 years without being registered or being formally recognized. I believe the state government, many state governments, may make an effort to relocate them, to find them a place that they could be relocated to and assist them with the relocation to make way for that public infrastructure. Sometimes there are problems when people set up places of worship, especially certain temples, in private property, you know, somebody else's land. So then becomes a fight not between the government and anyone, but rather between the landowner, who may get a court order to get the place of worship demolished because somebody else has encroached on his land. So then that's the second category that we do see also from time to time. So that's a bit unfortunate. But I think if we didn't have the first problem in the first place, you know, if we had sufficient land zoned for places of worship, you know, I like how, you know, like say Singapore, they've zoomed in down to town planning in great detail to allocate that, you know, not only is the land allocated for place of worship, they've even identified this land is allocated for a church, you know, this land is allocated for a Hindu temple, and this land is allocated for a mosque. If we had paid more attention to the demographic growth in the Klang Valley and what we need, and allocated land accordingly, I think we would see less incidences of people encroaching public spaces or encroaching other people's property to build a place of worship that later may have go through that painful process of being demolished.
So finally then, what do you want us to take away from our understanding of laws governing places of worship and how they can be reasonably and fairly allocated in our neighborhoods and in the places in which we live?
I think I hope that, you know, some of these questions today can clarify certain questions that the listeners out there may have. But I think ultimately we cannot rely on law, purely law, to resolve these differences, because a lot of these differences goes beyond what's written in law, but goes towards accepting the practice of other faiths around us. And it may make us uncomfortable, maybe due to our upbringings, to have these other faiths being practiced very nearby to us. But we've also got to accept that this is really a multi-racial, multi-religious country. and especially within the Klang Valley, this is very, very multiracial, multi-religious. So I hope that everyone can give space to one another, try to extend understanding, try to talk before arguing, you know, try to listen before lashing out. So, you know, that's probably what we need to move forward, you know, greater amount of understanding.
Thank you, Rajiv. I've been speaking with Rajiv Rishikaran, Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman. We've been discussing the Taman Medan protest as well as laws governing places of worship here on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.